Welcome to the Spiritual Sexual Shamanic Podcast. Tune in as we explore all things sexuality, transformation, relationships, and freedom with ISTA faculty and experts from around the world. I'm your host, Simon Marvell, faculty with ISTA.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Spiritual Sexual Shamanic Podcast. This is Usha Rose, and I am very honored to be interviewing a dear friend and mentor of mine, Shelby Lee. Hi, Shelby.
Hi.
Welcome. Thank you so much for being here with me today. So Shelby actually met on a dance floor in Northern California a few years ago, some ecstatic fusion dance event that I was hosting. And a few years later, I began working with Shelby, and I took one of her courses, Creating Safer Spaces, which is a really beautiful online course with some online live coaching elements around really knowing and understanding how to create safer spaces for students and clients. And then shortly after that, I was in a program with her called Body of Work, which was super valuable group container of really just getting mentorship and support as a coach working with clients, and just really supported me in becoming a better practitioner and a better coach. And yeah, I've been learning and studying with Shelby for many years, and she's brought so much value to my life and understanding trauma and nervous system regulation. And so I'm super excited to have her here on the ISTA podcast. And I'm just going to share a little bit more about her. Shelby Lee, LPC, is an educator, trauma specialist, somatic psychotherapist, coach, consultant, and meditation teacher, whose work celebrates the infinite possibilities of healing and growth. She is devoted to supporting trauma healing in a way that is gentle, simple, welcoming, and skilled. Shelby offers one-on-one trauma healing support to highly sensitive adults experiencing the heartbreaking impacts of being raised by narcissistic parents or caregivers. She also supports coaches, therapists, and health and wellness practitioners in one-on-one nervous system support as they deepen and expand their professional work and businesses. Shelby is a licensed professional counselor, a twice-certified coach, has devoured numerous trainings in the somatic treatment of complex and developmental trauma, and is a certified mindfulness and meditation teacher. Shelby is a proud alumna of California Institute of Integral Studies in Somatic Psychology, where her passion was sparked for integrating meditation, spirituality, embodiment, and trauma healing. So a plethora of experience, studies, and skill in trauma healing. And Shelby actually also has her own podcast called Relationship is Medicine that I love. And She interviews a lot of really amazing experts and guests on that podcast. And so I'd love to start the conversation with you, Shelby. We're going to range from trauma healing and nervous system regulation and some of your own personal journey to get to where you are now. And I love this concept, relationship as medicine. So I would really just love to start our conversation there around what that means to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. It's so good to be here with you in this capacity. I'm excited to see what unfolds. Hopefully something helpful. So relationship as medicine has so many different layers to it. It really comes out of my background as a therapist and learning how deeply our attachment styles impact how we heal and how that looks in the container between practitioner and client. So many of us, our pains and our sufferings, our ruptures happened in relationship when we were young. And so if harm can happen in relationship, so can healing.
Mm.
And so when we utilize the therapeutic relationship to really support and enhance that healing and empower our clients. And when we know how to do that, it's just the best medicine. I know it makes working as a provider, a therapist, coach, whatever we are, so much easier. It feels so meaningful. And also, it tends to make the healing process a lot more smooth and quick when we're aware of this.
Beautiful. So yeah, I'm hearing, you know, you're specifically talking about the relationship between a practitioner, therapist, and a client, or even potentially a student. Mm-hmm. And that makes a lot of sense to me. But I'm also curious, you know, like relationship as medicine in the realms of like friendship and community and lovers and partners, and where that fits in your perspective.
Yeah, it's infinite, the possibilities. And, you know, trauma at its core, it separates us or it severs us from our sense of belonging. And so when we can lean into supportive and safe enough relationships, doesn't matter if it's a friendship, a mentor, a guide in a breathwork class, you know, a partner, family, that can be used as medicine for learning to trust again, to feel safe again, to actually know who we are through contact with another. It's pretty beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. So you brought up trauma, and particularly, you know, a lot of our wounds and hurt happen when we're younger in relationship. And we can, if I love that, if rupture or hurt can happen in relationship, then repair and healing happens in relationship. And I'd love to open up the conversation around trauma, which is a very, in the last few years, as far as I can tell, become such a hot topic. And there's been so much more research and books and talks on understanding trauma and what it is and how it shows up and how it's affecting us. And you talked about attachment styles, and I imagine the conversation could be endless. And I think within the realm of this podcast, I'd be curious to hear from you, since you have so much experience and study around this, like, how do you define trauma? How do you see it showing up? And then there's a few more things I want to ask, but maybe we can start there.
Yeah. Really simply, trauma is anything that overwhelms our nervous system. It could, one thing for one person might be totally different for another. It doesn't have anything to do with the event. It has everything to do with what happens in our bodies in response to a threat or a perceived threat. And when we get overwhelmed, we go into those states of fight, flight, freeze, collapse. There are other states too. And when we're in that state of overwhelm, we call that a stress response. And for many folks, they don't get to complete those responses. They don't get to run away. They don't get to fight to their safety. They don't get to dissolve into nothingness. They have to endure the impact of the trauma. Yeah. And that leaves a mark on our bodies. Even though our minds kind of often grow up and can do other things, our bodies still hold the imprints of those experiences until we feel safe enough to be able to process them and embrace them, which is my definition of healing trauma, being able to embrace all of these experiences and welcome them into presence.
Beautiful. Yeah, I'd love to hear more about that, the healing trauma aspect. And maybe you could even talk a little bit, if you're open to, about some of your own personal journeys around healing, and also how that looks in your work now and the services that you offer.
Absolutely. Yes. You asked me two questions and I just have one. Can you say that again?
Yeah. Maybe starting with some of your own story around healing and how that led you where you are now.
Yeah. I was really suffering starting around age 11. I started smoking a couple packs of cigarettes a day by the time I was 13. And back then, people socialized as women were often diagnosed with anxiety. Folks socialized as men were diagnosed with ADHD, but nobody was talking about trauma.
Yeah.
And it took at least 20 years of weekly therapy, of trying to fix myself because I thought something was wrong with myself through therapy, re-perpetuating perfectionism and performance through healing, without it ever coming across my radar that what I had experienced was trauma and then that what had happened to me was wrong and that I wasn't wrong or bad. Mm. It never, I was just like, if I feel this bad, I must be, there's something wrong with me. And my family also perpetuated that notion. Mm-hmm. And I did that thing that so many people do where they say, you know, it wasn't that bad what happened to me growing up. So I can't even imagine why I feel this bad. I had a roof over my head. I had horses. I had as much food as I wanted to eat. I didn't see violence in my home. However, what I experienced was a pretty high level of emotional abuse and neglect. I grew up with a mother who could be classified as a narcissist. I don't do a lot of pathologizing. But just for context, I grew up with a father who was an addict and an abusive series of stepfathers in an emotional way.
Yeah.
And I just had no sense of safety, no sense of belonging. There was no attunement. There was, I just proved and proved and proved to try to be worthy and hurt myself a lot in order to perform, to try to get positive attention. There are so many folks out there that have been through this and would never even consider it was trauma.
Yeah.
I laid awake in my own bed every night scared at the actual threats that were being given to me by stepfathers, but never followed through on. And so I can never sleep. My system was ruptured for years and years and years. This is complex trauma, repeated events again and again, repeated bullying again and again, repeated neglect. And I was treated as though it was just anxiety. You just have generalized anxiety. And the reality is that was trauma. That's called developmental trauma. And until I was able to treat it as trauma, I was just spinning my wheels. I was in talk therapy, talking and talking and talking and reliving the events, which kept me in a state of dysregulation because nothing was healing, nothing was moving through, nothing was resolving. And then once it was recognized, that was the first big layer of healing where I didn't have to live with such a level of shame, because shame also goes hand in hand with trauma. I am bad. I am wrong. I failed. I'm broken. Yeah. And I started to see little glimpses of light that maybe it's not me. Maybe this actually could heal. Because at that time, it had been enough years that I was really sure I wasn't going to live much longer being that depressed and hating myself that much. And that impacts that in my life, as I looked around, there was a lot of chaos, a lot of drama, a lot of substances, and a lot of being in relationship with people that were not healthy for me because I wanted their attention. I was repeating the pattern. And then a whole another layer of healing came not too long ago, actually, just maybe a handful of years ago, when I understood neurodiversity. When I learned that I am a person who is neurodiverse and has a neurodiverse brain, and that I am highly sensitive, and I hit about four of the neurodiverse categories square on, which also took off the shame.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, there is actually a way to get regulated so that my symptoms aren't assaulting me every day, so that I'm not laying under this weighted blanket at 8 hours a day, just trying to get through each day to get to my job, to pay for my medical bills. And it's because of that, that I do the work that I do. In that journey, I did a lot of healing that wasn't so good for me. I went to the edges of the earth, working with some teachers that were amazing and healers that were amazing, and some that really did a number on me in unskillful ways. Mm-hmm. And so as I learned about the therapeutic relationship and how relationship could be medicine, it made me angry. I was pissed that these healers didn't understand their therapeutic power that they held and how they were using it with me. And I kind of set out to teach the world because I understood that they actually just didn't know. It's not like they were malicious. They didn't know the power that of healing that they could bring had they held our relationship differently and the healing that we were doing differently. It could have healed so much more quickly. But I was constantly in that state of repairing myself from that damage, which is really common for folks with complex trauma. It's just rupture, repair, because we find ourselves again and again trying to heal, but in old familiar situations. And so I just wanted to make a dent in helping people understand that their impact could be so much greater if they understood trauma-informed care and how we be in ourselves as practitioners can really help in a skillful way.
Yes. Thank you for sharing about your personal journey. I think that can, it's very relatable, I imagine, for a lot of people, and can probably support a lot of people understanding themselves a little bit more and even having some compassion for themselves around what their childhoods may have been like and the challenges they may be facing as adults. I would love to hear more about the responsibilities or power that a healer, a facilitator, a teacher has over their students, clients, and like what is the key to the the medicine for it to actually really be of service, and even where do you see it going wrong?
Yeah. I love seeing your eyes light up as you're talking about it. So I would say keys. There are definitely, you know, many things that we need to know as practitioners and as those seeking practitioners, right? But I think it really hit home for me when I learned about the concept of sharing power. As a practitioner coming into a session or facilitating a group, knowing and trusting that every individual that comes into our space has their own unique healing path, and it might not look like what I want it to be for them. And so I have to be really mindful that they get to bring all parts of themselves into my space. And I have less control. So that it's hard for healing practitioners because people want it to be just so that they can deliver their modality, and they don't want everything to go haywire and people to have too big of emotions or too much chaos or drama. And so it's a little bit like, as practitioners, the second, or actually really first key, is we have to be really regulated in ourselves.
Yeah.
We have to be so grounded and solid and spacious and safe enough in ourselves that these experiences can arise when working with human beings who come with complex histories, that we know that we can welcome every part that shows up in that space. And then the third, we're not going to take it personally. That means if somebody has interesting feelings for us, that doesn't get taken personally. That's actually, they're going through their healing process. Interesting feelings in a positive or negative way.
Yeah.
I am here in service of these feelings. I'm not here to interact and make them about me. And I trust that I know that this is part of the healing. So having discernment, that's that third key. And boundaries. Mm. Boundaries are so beautiful. And, you know, for most of us in the healing profession, it's one of the hardest things to have on every level, because we want to be nice. We want to be kind. We want to be gentle. We want to be generous. And sometimes our own histories make it hard to go, here's the container, here's the agreements, here's the guidelines, here's what I'm here for and what I'm not here for. Here's what I'm available for in our connection or not. And this is actually the most powerful medicine we can offer a person who has had complex trauma, because most of those folks are looking for the boundaries. Mm-hmm. If we don't find them, we're going to keep pushing into the boundaries. We're going to keep looking for them. So we have to be willing to have a backbone, which can sometimes challenge our wish to be polite or nice or generous. Yeah, it can be so healing. And one of the things I hear most from the practitioners who work with me, is that it's the most freeing thing for them to know that they can have boundaries for themselves. They have so much more energy and aliveness and access to themselves, instead of just thinking they need to be like soft and sweet and a pushover all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. That's super helpful. Understanding the relationship of our own boundaries, having discernment, not taking things personally, being able to regulate ourselves. And what was the first one you said?
Having the capacity to welcome
all parts
or whoever's showing up with all parts, knowing that we're actually not in control of their healing process. We don't have an agenda for them.
Yeah.
We trust that they have their own healing capacity and their wisdom is in them.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad I asked that, because I've loved that. It's so beautiful. And that's a great segue into my next question, which is, you know, as a student or a client, like, what is my responsibility for taking care of myself and being able to trust the person I'm working with?
Yeah. I thought of another one that I just made up, and I think it's the best thing ever. We have to be willing to receive feedback.
Oh, yeah.
And until we are in a place where we can put those perfectionist sides away and really hear somebody, even if it seems outrageous,
mm-hmm.
but stay regulated and connected to be able to hear, oh, I really let you down. I really missed you. I did that and that didn't feel good for you. Even if you're like, well, I don't know, you know, like to mm-hmm. be able to stay in that conversation as an adult and to be a safe enough space for folks to know they could come with you with every part, even the ones that have complaints about you. That's when I would say, okay, now you can go and be a healer. Mm-hmm. Now you can go facilitate. Now be a therapist. Because that's when the relationship can be the most medicine. People can really come and trust you. That's where we build that trust over time.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much. These are all so juicy and like inspiring and exciting. And I love that we were able to articulate, or you were able to articulate these pieces so well. I think it's super valuable.
Yeah. They're not easy. Until we get there, and then oh my gosh, life is so much easier because our ego stops screaming so loud that we need to be in control. We need to know all the answers. We need to do whatever. It's like, oh, okay, we're sharing power here.
Yeah, and this taking nothing personal, and also what the word that's coming to me is being humble. You know, it's like we don't ever really know what it's like for someone else or our impact on someone. And can we just be humble and listen and hold people with love?
Yeah.
Whatever they're going through and whatever parts are showing up.
Well, and we have to wrap compassion around that, because we are human. And I'm not going to tell you, after 18 plus years of working with clients, it's not hard to hear clients say, that really hurt, or you forgot that, even if like you forgot that email, you know, like I'm like, oh, that people pleaser part in me is not gone. And the part that wants to be seen as so helpful is not gone. I love getting appreciation, you know, and whatever, but to go, okay, those are those parts that need tending. And those are the parts that deserve care too, but I don't need to do that with my client.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that's part of why, you know, that being able to stay regulated and know how to resource yourself is so valuable. And I just want to add, you know, the program that you have, the body of work, where it's like, as a coach myself, it's like, oh, when those hard things are happening in my client relationships, to have other colleagues and a community that I can go and resource myself and get peer mentorship. And, you know, I think it's important as practitioners, coaches, therapists, facilitators, whatever we are, to have ways of resourcing ourselves and feeling supported and in these ways.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So your other question.
Yes.
Yeah. As participants, as folks on our own healing path, how do we know? Was your question, how do we know when we can step into those spaces, or what do we need to look for?
The question I asked was, what is my responsibility as a client or a student or a seeker in terms of like taking care of myself versus how much I'm trusting the person? You know, like, am I giving my power away? Like, what's that balance of being open and surrendering to my practitioner, my teacher? Like, I think there's an interesting dance there of like wanting to know that I'm safe and also wanting to like not give my power away necessarily. Does that make sense what I'm asking?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And so this is, I mean, it's going to be different for everybody. And in the most perfect world, what I wish for all of us is that as we're each stepping into a healing space, whether it's one-on-one or in a group, that we can do it slowly over time and build trust. Many of us who have experienced trauma tend to be intensity junkies. And so we also didn't learn how to go to the person in power, who's the person holding the space, and ask the right questions, because we just didn't get that confidence. We didn't get our voice, for many of us, to know that, like, actually, I do deserve care. I need a phone call to make sure that we connect before I send you $8,000 or whatever it is. If in the perfect world, we could, one foot in front of the other, step into these spaces so that we can build trust together over time. And that might look different for everyone, but I don't know any other way, because when someone comes to me and they're like, I trust you completely, after a 20-minute phone call, I have a red flag up. I want someone to not trust me until I have earned their trust. And that can take weeks or months or years. And so I want to find a way together to welcome folks into our spaces where they can go, okay, so I've taken a workshop with you. I feel pretty good here. I'm feeling safe enough. Now I'm stepping into a bigger experience and a bigger, and I want us in the role of seeker to be able to go, so are you trauma-informed care? What does that mean to you? If I feel upset about something, how are you going to respond to me? Is it you or is it an assistant that I'll be talking to? That I want to be able to ask about 10 questions. If I do have a part of me that feels really young and vulnerable show up, how will that be held? If I'm overwhelmed with emotion because I'm stepping into this program that sounds quite intense and like it could bring up a lot, are there resources for me? What are those? What do they look like? Mm-hmm. And then to actually have the ability to feel, did the answer really satisfy that part of me that's often young, that is wondering if she or he or they can trust? I'm really good at overriding that part. I'm an expert. And so I tend to go into things really fast so that I don't have to actually go, okay, I hear you. I see you. I'm holding you. And a lot of the ways we sign up for programs and experiences these days really override that too, just to kind of get people in the door. So I'm talking about like the ideal world. How do we really be in relationship as we're saying yes to things? And how do we titrate it little bits at a time to build that trust together so we can build that safety together?
Yeah, beautiful. And I just want to highlight, you know, as you were speaking about that, the part where you said, you know, I want to really gather the information and then feel, you know, and you have your hand on your heart. It's like this awareness of what am I experiencing in my body? I've gathered information. There's like intellectual analysis. And then there's also trusting my gut, my heart, my intuition, my womb space, or, you know, wherever we feel in our bodies, how did this information land and how is it feeling in my body? And that our body carries guidance for us.
Yeah. And whatever way we each process and resource is so important. So I might go for a walk in the woods with my dog by the river and just kind of, how was that conversation? What felt old, familiar? What felt hopeful, inspired? And then I might go talk to a trusted friend, you know, in order to slow myself down, because I know for myself, I am impulsive. And so I have to put things in place to honor that part that wants to learn how to slow down, to not keep jumping into overpriced communities that I actually end up feeling like in massive amounts of tears over because I did too much too fast. You know, whatever it is, that's me. I'm not going to be everyone. But how do you process? How do you slow down? And do you have people in your life that can help you do that?
Yeah, and I'm noticing that this is really applicable to so many things, not just deciding to work with a specific therapist or coach or deciding to do a personal growth retreat, but like any decision we're making in our life, like, do we want to keep dating this person or do we want to accept this job or go on this trip or move into this house? It's like, oh, can I gather the information and then feel in my body and connect to nature and do all of these, like, gather information from all of these different realms, not just intellectual, but somatic and environmental and reflecting with trusted friends and slowing down enough to find alignment and clarity around, like, where is my yes?
Yeah. Yeah. And my yes now is so different than it used to be. And that's what happens for us when we become more embodied, integrated, and healed. My yes used to be like up here. Of like, oh yeah, let's do it. Like I'm on, I'm in. And now it's like you said, gut, you know, it's got to be sacrum gut. I have to be able to breathe. And like, even in my own voice, it'll be a different sounding yes.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I went to, I even called a naturopathic clinic a year or two ago. And I was like, are your doctors trauma informed? And the receptionist was so incredibly rude that I was like, nope, not trauma informed. And not for me. And so healing for me looks like, I thought healing looked like being an activist and hounding them with emails and telling them that why they're not trauma informed and trying to get them to become trauma informed. And for me now, it's just, nope, not for me, or nope, not right now. Instead of doing all of that labor to try to get people to show up for me in the way that I needed.
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, that also sounds like a way of like the discernment piece of like, how am I taking care of myself? And I don't necessarily need to change the entire world. I can just follow the things that work for me, that are in alignment with me, and keep doing, in your case, what you're doing for people that want to receive and want to learn.
Yeah. Well, and for a long time, I think a lot of us do this, is we get a no And we think, oh, wait, but I have trauma, so I feel no to everything anyway. So I'm going to kind of like push the edge a little until I can find that yes. And a lot of practitioners will kind of push people like through that no. And to me, it's like, nope, a no is a no. I don't care for what reason you do not. I actually am offended by myself now if I try to turn that into I have trauma, so I'm just going to do it anyways. It's like, nope, it's just a no. It's a no, mm-hmm. sweetheart. Like, maybe later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
On this, like, the subject of trauma healing, curious to know, you know, if people that are listening that have, I mean, we all have some trauma in one form or another. What are your recommendations for people that are wanting to do deep healing work and maybe they haven't started yet, or they've done one program, or they've gone to like one ISTA, or they've worked with a coach, or they're wondering if they should go to a week-long training, or they should work with somebody one-on-one? You know, like, what are the steps that you recommend for people that are curious about doing deep healing work?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, I'm so glad. I'm so grateful that you want to be in healing work. I mean, that's the very first thing I would say to them, you know, anyone listening. Like, tears actually came to my eyes as you were talking, because it is such an honor to get to support folks on that path. And it is no joke. When we say, yes, I want to heal, we're saying yes to claiming ourselves and our lives. And it's so beautiful. So first there, to just really appreciate yourself, because it's courageous. Well, I actually won't even say that. For some of us, it's not even an option. Like, I've just been in survival mode forever. I have to do something different. But it's so deeply important and meaningful to me. And I would say, as much as you can, to slow down the process and really take care around interviewing folks, you know, and maybe that's 5 questions. Maybe it's a half hour on the phone. Maybe it's some emails back and forth. Whatever it is for you, you'll know, because you'll see with the responses. Do you feel held, nurtured, cared for, like there's space for you? Or do you feel like you're going to have to work really hard to feel supported?
Mm.
And so, again, I mean, not all of us can sense our bodies. We don't all have that. Mm. It took me 30 years to figure that one out. But to really go, does the response make me feel better or worse? You know, and maybe try again, you know, and then, you know, if it's just keeps not feeling good, probably not going to work. If it feels inspiring, if you feel hopeful, if you can feel your heart kind of lift, I would say ask a few more questions and just see.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? What would your answer be?
Yeah, I mean, very similar. I think I would expand even more to like what's coming now is, if I was interested in that work, I would probably start reaching out to friends and asking, you know, like, do you have recommendations, or I'm interested in exploring this? Do you have, I'd start looking for recommendations probably, and ask for people what their experiences have been with, or look for people that I see have done healing work around whatever the specific thing I'm looking for healing work around, whether it's trauma or sexuality or relationship, partnership, romantic stuff. Starting with recommendations, and then asking questions, and this actually brings up another question for me that I want to I would love to hear you talk more about, which is the role of nervous system regulation, because that's something I've done a lot with you and I've learned so much about in the last couple of years, and absolutely love it, and have just been diving into like what does that mean and how does that play a role in our healing. And I feel like it's such an important aspect. So if we can just kind of like shift over to that as well, And maybe you can just share a little bit, like, what is nervous system regulation and how is that supportive in our healing process? Why is it important?
Yes. I'm going to do the thing I always do, go back and add to the last question and come to this because I think it will make more sense.
Yeah.
Part of why I am so adamant about, can we slow it down when we're entering those spaces? The level of care you hear behind my voice is because what happens when we enter a healing space is we bring all parts of ourselves. And that means the young parts too. And those can be so tender and vulnerable. It can be the young parts that didn't get the care, the safety, the nourishment, the protection that they needed. And so they're right there on the surface in most healing spaces we walk into, just ready to be seen, held, heard, understood, healed. And so that's why I'm like, be careful. I mean, don't be like hypervigilant, but just care for yourself the way you would care for a young child that you would do your due diligence with if you were taking them into an experience, because they do not go, they get louder in these experiences. And so we want to be putting ourselves in the places that can hold those parts too, because it can be so revolutionary when the healers and facilitators understand, oh, these parts will be here too. We're going to be gentle with this. And nervous system regulation really supports this. The way that I do nervous system regulation work is directly connected to the ruptures that happen in early life, in when we weren't nurtured or met or emotionally supported or fed. You know, we had caregivers that were unavailable in some way. We work with the parts of the nervous system that didn't get supported back then, that didn't get to feel safe enough to really just allow balance, allow ourselves to be in our full capacity of our human spectrum, to keep us functioning in a way where we can thrive instead of survive. And so we work towards learning co-regulation, which is about the relationship, feeling safe enough together to support healing. You can never guarantee co-regulation. You can't be like, you over there, you're going to co-regulate with me. But when we feel safe enough, it naturally happens together.
Yeah.
So the type of nervous system regulation work I do, it's not like we're jumping in ice baths and doing really intense breath work. And that can be super supportive, but this is so gentle and soft. And it's meant to provide that support that we didn't get in those early years. So the body starts going, oh, I am safe enough now in the present moment to connect inside and to connect out and to go out into the world and be my fullest, most expressed self possible. Mm-hmm. And when we're regulated, that can happen. But when we're not, we're in survival mode.
Yeah.
I was laughing because I'm hosting a retreat in May, and I had this brilliant idea because I used to teach really intense meditation retreats. And I was like, oh, I'm going to just replace the meditation with nervous system regulation practices. And everybody's going to think it's brilliant. And it's been so funny because nobody gets it. What are we going to be doing? Why? I don't know. That sounds weird. I'm not going. And so having you have me explain it is so helpful because I just keep tripping over my words. It's the most beautiful thing I have ever known working in this industry for so long. And it brings so much ease and comfort and spaciousness and rest. And I'm like, why wouldn't you want to come? And people are like, well, we just don't really understand what's happening there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for it to become a revolution.
Well, can you share, like, what does it look like? Like, what would you have me or us be doing?
Yeah. Or not doing? Well, so I heard Trevor Noah actually on Dax Shepherd's podcast speak to this so beautifully last night. He was talking about, you know, growing up in chaos and always on guard for violence, how being the person who's comfortable, just like ready to handle the situation, is so familiar. But being comfortable in the spaciousness, the quiet, the rest, the luxury, maybe, that feels scary. Because that was always when other shoe would drop. That was always when, like in a horror movie, like the thing would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we'll be doing is we'll be doing gentle movement, which supports nervous system regulation. Somebody in the morning, Tay, will be facilitating that from Brazil. And then I will be guiding really simple practices, which you can be laying down, you can be sitting, supports adrenals, kidneys, brainstem, feet, digestive system, heart, all these places that had to work overtime to keep us safe, mm-hmm. whether it was emotional or physical safety, and often kept working overtime just to protect us. And we work with these places just like a meditation, just going, we're right here with these places. And we allow space for all the emotions to come up because they kind of get stored there too. Yeah. Some people feel a lot. Some people feel relieved. Some people feel just more content or at peace in the practices.
Mm-hmm.
We do that for about 45 minutes to an hour, along with a teaching on the nervous system and how we can actually really allow ourselves to bring more parts of ourselves out that maybe have been hidden. And the whole goal is just bringing people who just feel burned out and exhausted and ready for really feeling aliveness and feeling safe there, feeling rest and feeling safe there.
Yeah.
In the afternoons, we just surf or chill by the pool. So I like that will be the advanced practice is how do we take the nervous system regulation into feeling those spacious moments with ease, those playful moments with ease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going back to that slowing down concept that you've mentioned a couple times. And for me, you know, we live in our modern culture, society, there's just so much doing and like activity and rushing and productivity and efficiency, you know, that's so much a part of our culture. And in my experience, I found like, wow, so much emotion shows up when we slow down and get still and we just quiet the mind and listen to our body. And it's like, oh my goodness, I didn't even know what was here because I've been so busy covering all of that up with mental chatter and doing and connecting and et cetera, et cetera. And what incredible healing and value there is in really slowing down and allowing space and time just to be with my own sensations and care for my nervous system. And the word nourishment, you know, when you were talking about that, it's like, oh, just like resting into some really deep, deep nourishment for the body and the soul.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of brings it full circle to like, for me, the definition of healing trauma is to embrace it. And so when we are able to slow down enough and allow it to come up, because we have, you know, our whole history comes with these places in our body as we slow down. And we could either do old school, which is what I used to do, like really go into that difficulty, really pick apart that trauma and try to dig it to the root. Or we could softly welcome it, like we were welcoming an old friend without going, what's wrong with you? How do I make you different? It's like, oh, how do we grow ourselves wide enough to welcome it and be with it just like we would be with an old friend? And that naturally allows for trauma resolution. We come into new relationship with it. We learn that we can be with discomfort. We learn that we can be with pain and suffering and grief because it's part of being human. Yeah. But we also learn that we can be with joy and play and pleasure and aliveness because our nervous system works that way. It's like the more we have capacity for one of these, the more we have capacity for another. And so it allows us to have that full spectrum of our humanity. It gives us back who we are, what we're here to do, and how we want to be.
Yes. Yes, I love it. And that just sounds like the most perfect place to conclude our conversation today. I feel like, yeah, it really did come full circle. Mm. Wow. Thank you so much, Shelby. Where can people learn more about you if they want to explore your programs or your one-on-one offerings?
My website is Shelby-Leigh, L-E-I-G-H, shelbylee.com, Instagram, fierceheart.shelbylee, LinkedIn, Facebook. You can find me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just want to share again, your programs, Creating Safer Space and Body of Work, were super valuable for me, that for people that are practitioners specifically and wanting to really learn more about becoming more trauma-informed, super valuable.
Mm.
And before I let you go, I'm going to ask you a couple of our rapid fire questions for a little fun and getting to know you in a different way. Okay. What have you done for the first time recently?
Sort of recently, I've been dirt biking up a storm and loving it so much.
Wow.
Cool. I even jumped.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
What is something you always take on retreat with you?
A very cozy, soothing blanket.
Mm. Nice. What is your favorite dessert?
There are so many. The first thing that came to mind was a gluten-free maple bar.
Wow, unique. What's one thing you wish you knew as a teenager?
That I would make it.
Mm.
That I would find a way through.
Mm.
And I would meet really cool people along the way.
Oh, so sweet. And last question, what happens after we die?
Who cares?
Awesome. I love it. So fun. Thank you so much, Shelby. Such an honor to be with you.
Thank you. This felt really, really nourishing to be with you.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Sexual Shamanic Podcast. To find out more about ISTA's retreats, festivals, workshops, or to work with our faculty, see our website, ISTA.life, or find us on Facebook at www.ista.life, or on Instagram at ISTA Community.